The conversation continues on the bench on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
All right, it's 9:03 on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. World Series starts tonight. And you can hear it right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. All right, so if you're in your car, you can't, for whatever reason, you're not somewhere, and my mic falls apart. If you're somewhere where you can't get to a TV, you can listen to it. I think it's, is it Dan Shulman or is it John Giambi? Shulman is like the voice of baseball.
It might be Shulman, yeah.
I think Shulman is the best voice in baseball. I do. Nothing against our local guys here. I think that Robert Ford and Steve Spark. Did you hear any of Sparky's interviews after the ALCS?
No, but I've heard it when I worked over there. I got to hear a lot of it, and it's on a different level. I mean, Steve Sparks is on a completely different level after an ALCS because I don't know when he starts shotgunning drinks, but he does it very obviously. He's on a broadcast, so he can't be getting hammered. And that was a close game until Tucker's home run gave everyone a chance to breathe when he had the 3-run home run. But for whatever reason, Sparks is able to go full liquored up mode. I think that's fair to say that he gets into it now. And by the time he's in the clubhouse asking questions on the air, it is unbelievable. The things he says, the things he does. Steve Sparks is, he's not afraid to have a couple pops after the broadcast is over. I'm just telling you, he gets there to the place of like, you know, he gets a little buzzed. He has low tolerance or he is hammering those. He is shotgunning beers. It's either one or the other.
Either that or they're, you know, pouring beer in his mouth and spraying him with it. And, you know, a lot of guys are slurring a little bit by the time. Did you see Dustin Johnson after? I mean, they were just celebrating with the champagne after they won the Ryder Cup.
Guys.
But they're doing the same thing. They're all celebrating. What? Oh, Dustin Johnson. Dustin Johnson is a part of your bro. Johnson's a part of your bro.
Sparks like, why are you? I want to ask you a question, Dustin! Like, oh, yeah. Sparks has been hitting it.
Oh, yeah.
So it's Shulman, Chris Singleton, and Jessica Mendoza.
Not Eddie?
No.
No.
So it's all going to be on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, the entire series. You can catch it right here with the national coverage. And
that was last year. Why did this have this link? All right, let me do some more research.
Yeah, so that's right.
Either way, we're going to have it at 97.5.
Yeah, we got it. True. It's ESPN 97.5.
Any of the games start at 10 a.m. so that we have to get off at 9?
No, that's why when we have the Masters, that's perfect, or the British Open.
Yeah, people need to listen to that on the air.
Yeah, you have. And if we don't get, you know, the biggest events in sports, then it's just stupid. So, Todd, get on that. Bobby is in Katy, and he wants to talk about this series. What do you say, Bobby? Hey, Bobby.
Not much. Hey, I just had a comment about the Braves, man. I'm 37. I grew up them just destroying us in the playoffs for, like, I don't know. I know they eliminated us at least 5 times. I'm just curious if that's a rooting interest for anyone else. I mean, I'm looking at it like redemption from all the National League days.
Well,
I'll hang up and listen.
Well,
they
beat us. I'm going off memory now. 97, 99, 2001, and we beat them 04 and 05. So we actually have redeemed ourselves against them somewhat. We got to the World Series in 5, going through them, and then the Cardinals, and then, they beat us. They beat us pretty good 3 times, but we beat them pretty good a couple. So this would even it up. I'm pretty sure. I'll have to look at Astros Braves history, Astros Braves playoff history, I think we're on a pretty good. Actually, we have beaten them the last couple of times. So. I don't know that there's any of that still. We're in the American League now. They're in the National League. I mean, I don't think that there's any. There's no, obviously, there's no vitriol towards the Astros by Braves fans because we won it and they didn't because they weren't even in it. you know, so I think this is going to be a clean series. If it was the Dodgers and the Dodgers were without all the players they're without, I'm sure that there would be a bunch of whining by the Dodgers if they had, oh, well, you did it because blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah, well, whatever. We didn't have Lance McCullers, so our ace. So, and you don't have Clayton Kershaw because Clayton Kershaw sucks anyway. We wish you did have Clayton Kershaw. We really do. We wish you had Trevor Bauer because he's such a nice guy.
Right.
You know? Yeah, you know, one of your really nice guys. Justin Turner, great guy. You know, with COVID, walking around with and trying to kill people with COVID last year during the celebration.
Attempted murder?
Yeah, it was attempted murder.
He knew he had it. He's out on the field. Like,
well, they pulled him off the field, and then he went back out there with no mask on.
Like, what's up, guy? Woo!
Yeah.
Hey, you're not supposed to be here. Major League Baseball deciding when they're going to pull a guy out of a game. Like, should we just let him stand? It's not the Astros.
Yeah. I mean, it's at least we didn't cheat. Okay. All right. The Dodgers didn't cheat. Okay. Yeah. Everybody knew that. We didn't even mention, what an exciting game last night. Came down to the final minutes. A field goal by the Saints wins it 13-10.
What an amazing game that was. I won a fantasy matchup because of one 84-yard touchdown by DK Metcalf. Gave me 15.4 points, and I got there. And thank God, because he got one catch the rest of the game. Let me tell you, watching Jameis Winston is a little tough. It's not pretty compared to what you've been watching with Drew Brees. But let me give Jameis some real credit here. He's only got three interceptions for the year.
Yeah.
And the big issue with Jameis has always been turning a ball over. And I give him a lot of credit, and I give a lot of credit to Sean Payton. They're doing an excellent job of calling games and handling the offense so that Jameis is not asked to try to do too much, because when he does that, that's when problems happen. Jameis is obviously making much better decisions, taking care of the football. They're not very explosive as an offense. I mean, he had five touchdown passes in one game. He had four in another. He had five against Green Bay, four against Washington. Nine of his touchdown passes came in those two games, but he's not turning the ball over, though, and that's the real key there. Now, what you're seeing with Seattle is, you know, Geno Smith has never been considered a good quarterback. He's the backup, but you get to see just how huge a difference there is between an elite quarterback and his backup. Russell Wilson to Geno Smith, I mean, you really, truly get to see. It's on display when you have a great quarterback like Russell Wilson, and then you go all the way down to his backup, and it's really not even as much about Geno Smith as it is about backup quarterbacks. The chasm between those two, an elite starter and a backup, you see on the field with statistics and output the difference. It's like it's staggering. It's night and day.
Is it? Because is
Baker
it,
to Case, there's going to be a difference, but it's not going to be as big a difference. Up. But Baker's not an elite quarterback. I think Geno Smith's on the low. Geno's not on the Case end, and Baker's not on, to me, is not on the Russell Wilson. So, but there's still going to be a difference. But when you have, that's why I said an elite quarterback like Aaron Rodgers. I don't even know who's the backup.
Jordan
there?
Love.
Oh yeah, Jordan Love. Huge difference if you took.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, I mean a huge difference. Now DK Metcalf is a weapon, but Devontae Adams is it's the same thing as with DeAndre Hopkins. You're going to get a ton of catches and a ton of, you know, with Metcalf, it's more about explosive plays. He's not going to be as high volume a catch guy. It's like a Devontae Adams. But, I mean, just think of the elite quarterbacks and the backups. Peyton Manning to Dan Orlovsky. To Dan Orlovsky when it was Indianapolis. They were a one-win team that year. They got it against the Texans when Peyton Manning didn't play. That's how big a difference it is. Tommy, yeah, I know they had Tommy to Cam. What a huge difference it was. Yeah, they did have Matt Castle. You could point to the Matt Castle year, which everyone does.
That's where Belichick got his reputation that one year.
Roethlisberger wasn't even elite, but you saw from Roethlisberger to his backups, your boy from Oklahoma State.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't too good. Like, going from really good quarterback to backup is a, man, it takes a lot out of an offense. That's why those quarterbacks, when point spreads come out, they're worth at least 4 points most of the time, sometimes even more.
Seattle still covered yesterday. Thank you. Good night.
Yeah, did they? Saints were six, weren't they?
Oh, I got them at 3.5. Yeah.
Were they 3.5?
3.5.
Wow.
Yeah, and they covered.
Yeah, that sounds about more.
Yeah, 9:13. It was in Seattle, so. 9:13 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I want to talk about cold, clean, crisp, refreshing. And if you're on Twitch right now, you can see my Coors Light laptop. If you're with me at the ballpark tonight, you'll see my Coors Light drinking ability. If you're on the golf course with me ever, if you were on the golf course with me yesterday at Dan Pastorini's tournament, you saw cold, clean, crisp, refreshing Coors Light. It's the official beer of, well, just about everything I do. It's hard to love a beer, but I love a beer, and it's Coors Light. And we went to a foofy place, one of those ones where they have a bunch of taps, like 30, 40 taps along the wall. And there was not one Coors Light there. And I said, why would you open a place and not have Coors Light? Because that's just, to me, it's just dumb. It's just dumb. Oh, we got all these stupid crap beers. Who cares? When you want cold, clean, crisp, and refreshing, you want Coors Light. You want the world's most refreshing beer. That's the official beer of me. Make it the official beer of you. It's Coors Light, baby.
ESPN 97.5.
We'll be right back after this break.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Time to bring in Sage Rosenfels talking NFL football, and I would say he does this with us every week, and I would say talking Texans football, but Sage... You know, when we first started this thing, we thought, you know what? Let's get somebody in here with NFL football expertise and let's break down exactly what's happening on Sundays with our team. And I don't think it takes an NFL expert, Sage, to look at what the Texans are doing and say, boy, they are really, really crappy. They are just a total mess. And I don't know if it's... It started out pretty good with Tyrod Taylor, and he is supposed to practice tomorrow, which I think would be a good thing, and he's going to get back out there. So far what you've seen out of Davis Mills, but do you think that they don't have to get a quarterback early in next year's draft by what you've seen out of Davis Mills so far?
What I've seen out of Davis is, you know, I just know the transition from college to pros, and every college quarterback comes in with sort of a different base level, right? Some guys are running very sort of college-y offenses, and they get to the pros, and they haven't even been under center. Obviously, Davis is much further along than those types of guys. He was coached more like a pro quarterback in college, it seems to me. He does a lot of good things out there. He can't tackle and stop the run on defense. He doesn't do that. So the 172 yards of rushing, he did not give up. That wasn't his fault. He's not perfect. He's still learning the game. But for a rookie, I see a lot of good things. I don't know if he's going to be a starting quarterback in this league. I don't know. I feel like he's, at the minimum, if the kid's going to play for a long time in the NFL, he's an NFL quarterback. Is he a franchise-changing, you know, quarterback where he completely changes the direction of the entire franchise from a losing team to a winning team? I mean, I think he's a guy that can be a part of that, but no, he's not like a, you know, transcendent quarterback. And you're not going to find very many transcendent quarterbacks, even if you have the first pick in the draft. It's a crapshoot, as we all know. And you're definitely not going to find too many in the third round. But he's doing his job out there. He's not perfect. He makes mistakes. There's things he can do better. But again, for a rookie to be put in that position, he's not doing a terrible job by any means. I think he's doing a very respectable job for a rookie, and I think he's going to get better as the year goes, as this year goes on and as his career goes. And so I think when you have this conversation about where the Texans are. The quarterback position is not a strength, but they have a lot of other weaknesses that are far more important, in my opinion. I mean, you just can't give up that many yards rushing. You can't give up wide open passing plays on third and long to tight ends. That, you know, the quarterback can only do so much. He doesn't, you know, all the holding penalties and the not covering up the left tackle on a third and one that now creates a third and six. So, you know, I mean, there's so many mental errors that are just self-inflicted wounds when I watch this football team. So when I watch the game and think back to all the positives and negatives, I don't sit there and go, man, the quarterback really stinks. So, again, is Davis Mills the transcendent quarterback that is going to can completely cover up all the other weaknesses on this team? No, he's not that player. But this team has so many issues on it, and quarterback is just sort of, you know, one of those issues. And to be honest with you, if this is a really good football team, if this was, say, the Green Bay Packers, as far as players and coaches and the discipline and the execution, I think Davis Mills would be playing better. And he'd be scoring points, and the team wouldn't be 1-6. You know, they'd probably be 4-3 or something like that, instead of, you know, the Packers are 6-1. So he's not the issue on this football team. I can tell you that.
Well, in the last five games, in the second half of games, the Texans have been outscored 92-10. It is an ongoing issue where they just can't score in the second half. They just, for whatever reason, the second halves are an absolute disaster. That's got to be a concern. I mean, this has been going on for really all seven games. Frankly, they've been beaten badly in the second half of games. Even Jacksonville beat them by 4 in the second half of the game. But ever since then, I mean, we're talking about beatings in the second half of games. What do you account? You're watching these games. Like, what accounts for that, to be competitive in one half and then completely not even competitive in the second half of the game?
You know, it is odd that, you know, they seem to go into halftime and it is a competitive game, as you said, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know, first drive and the other team scores a touchdown and it's basically like, all right, well, game over, because now it's a 3-score game or something like that. So it does seem to sort of fall off the cliff in the second half. I do think this team, it hasn't given up. I don't think NFL guys really give up. I really don't. But I think they don't see much light at the end of the tunnel, and that's really hard. It's hard to be in a spot where you just know you have so many weaknesses, and you get down, and then you're playing hard, you're playing right there, then all of a sudden the other team makes a couple plays, and you're down by two or three scores, and it's like, you know, then we go 3-and-out, or then we have another penalty. And it's like, you know, this sort of, it feels like the game is over. And then you just get sort of run over the course of the second half. So, I mean, this team just makes too many mistakes. They make a lot of sort of self-inflicted wound mistakes. And it's ugly football. It really is ugly football. And it's coaches, it's players, it's the, you know, whatever. Yeah, I mean, when they have penalties, that you can't say it's the coach's fault, but at the end of the day, there's a lack of, I guess, discipline on this football team, because teams with no discipline have a lot of penalties, and this team does, and they get in really bad situations. When you get in third and long all the time with a rookie quarterback, you're going to get blown out, and they seem to be in way too many third and longs, and they seem to give up big plays when they have third and long on defense. I mean, the whole shot to A.J. Green on 3rd and 24 should be an embarrassment to that defense. That's an embarrassment to be able to hit that ball in that spot. Yes, it was a great throw, but to be able to give up that play on 3rd and 24, that should absolutely never happen. And that's a lack of discipline. Because it's really obvious that cornerback has to think back and make him check it down. Make him check it down. We'll come up and we'll make the tackle for a 10 or 15 yard gain. That's fine. But to give up that play is sort of shows the over. It's a metaphor for sort of the entire team, and it's bad football.
Is there any way to? I mean, because he talks about it, Coach Cully talks about it every week. the penalties killed us. The penalties killed us. We're working on. How do you work on? What do you do? What do you do to change penalties?
I don't know. I just think that, you know, the guys that get penalties, they don't play. You know, if you're a tight end and you're the only guy on that side, and you know there's no receiver to your left, and you look to your right, and there's a right tackle, you have to cover him up. And the fact that you're standing at a 2-point stance, that is just, you know, and you're off the ball, that's just unacceptable. Like, that's like, you're not even thinking about what's going on. So some of that is like, listen, guys, if the guys that keep getting these penalties, we're going to sit you down and play some other guys. And, you know, it may not equate to more wins and losses this year, but it might equate to some wins at the end of the season, because guys have sort of had enough is enough and everyone starts tightening the ship a little bit. But right now, you're just seeing way too many bad penalties in situations that just shouldn't happen by guys with a lot of experience, a lot of NFL experience making dumb plays. And at some point, yeah, say enough's enough. And you know, this team has lost too many games this year. They've lost too many games in the past. And you just got to sort of sit those guys down and say, you know what? This is not the team we're going to have. We're going to play guys that don't hurt the football team. We're going to play guys that make the decisions, even if they're not as talented, even if they're not making as much money, and just sort of, you know, draw a line in the sand. And if you make stupid penalties, you're out. And you know, that's how I would do it if I was a head coach, because obviously the season is in a sense sort of lost as far as, like, you know, trying to get the playoffs and those types of things. And so this is about building a culture for the future. If this head coach is going to be here and wants to be here for the future, which I'm sure he does, you have to start building a culture of winning. And I know that sort of sounds college-y, but there is culture in the NFL. When Gary Kubiak in 2006, we weren't a very good football team. We were only 6-10, but you could tell we were building. When we started off 0-4, but you could tell we were building a culture towards the future, and we just didn't have sort of good enough players yet, but we were trying every single day with absolute focus to execute and to improve, and that ends up sort of reaping the dividends years down the line. And that's where I'm at with this football team, is are they building a culture for the future, or are they just going to keep making undisciplined mistakes as they made in this football game?
We'll dig into the rest of the NFL when we come back with Sage Rosenfels. Right now, I want to tell you about your spot to get your World Series tickets. Tonight, game one, it jumps off, Astros versus Braves. And you can go to my friends over at SimpleSeats.com. A lot of you have asked about the website. I highly recommend headed there. Ticket prices are going down as we speak. I'm looking at it right now. It's a World Series, so they're not going to be, you know, inexpensive. You know that. But if you want a chance to get into the park and really experience history, how often have you ever had that chance? Tonight might want to be a day that you think about visiting my friends over at Simple Seats, SimpleSeats.com. One of the great things that you're going to find is that at Simple Seats, you never have any fees, no fees. And with the other companies, what they do is they'll make it a lower ticket price. You think, oh, this is a lower price than Simple Seats. You get there, you get into the, you put your, you know, you get into the shopping cart with your two tickets you're getting or your four tickets. And when you get there, you're like, whoa, why is it this much? Well, because they've got a percentage that they hit your tickets for their convenience fees. That's how they're making all their money. And by the end of it, you have not gotten a true representation from that company about what that ticket is going to cost. The Simple Seats, the price you see is the price you get. You'll pay taxes on it, and that's it. No fees ever. It's a one-page checkout. It's very, very simple. It's easy to maneuver. You've got Texans tickets, Aggies, Longhorns. You've got local sporting events, including, obviously, throughout the World Series. So make sure that you bookmark the page and visit often when you are ready to get in the door of World Series at SimpleSeats.com.
This is Jose Altuve, and you're listening to Jung and Lance on ESPN 97.5. Brought to you by Golf Course Chevrolet, Witt, and GMC.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
All right, welcome back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Just watching First Take and whatever. But Stephen A. had his list of the best teams in the NFL, Sage. Sage Rosenfeld's with us here. He had the Cardinals first, the Buccaneers second, the Packers third, the Cowboys third, Packers fourth, and the Rams fifth. That's five NFC teams. And you can make an argument that that's a pretty good list. Five NFC teams at the top of the heap in the NFL. It is awfully lopsided this year, isn't it?
It does feel like the NFC is a mix of two things. It's a mix of these elite teams, the ones you just named off, and then a bunch of, you know, really crappy teams. And the AFC just doesn't feel as strong. The teams that are leading the divisions, you know, the Titans, the Bills, the Raiders, and the Bengals, they look like good football teams, but they don't seem to be dominant football teams as you watch them play. They've had occasional surprise losses. The Bills had a couple losses. Everyone thought they were going to be, you know, pretty dominant in the AFC this year, and they're not. Obviously, the big surprise in the AFC is Kansas City, seeing where they are. I think a lot of people also thought Cleveland. Of course, they're only 4-3, but that Cleveland would be better than they currently are in that really tough AFC North division. Obviously, the Bengals are surprised, so no one's really buying the Bengals yet at 5-2. But yeah, the NFC, and if you look at those teams that you just named off, great quarterbacks. Right. I mean, the Cardinals with Kyler Murray, that's a great story. But the other teams, the Rams, Stafford's playing great in that system. I think everyone knew, get that guy out of Detroit. I wonder what he can do with a real offensive coordinator, the real head coach with a real franchise. And we're seeing that in real time. Obviously, Packers and Aaron Rodgers, one of the best of all time. Tom Brady, the Buccaneers, the best of all time. And Dak's playing fantastic for the Cowboys. So, it does seem like the NFC is a stronger overall conference than the AFC. But, of course, at the bottom, you know, the Lions are absolutely awful. And, you know, the Seahawks are not what they used to be. You know, the Panthers are bad, and you know, the Falcons are bad, and the Giants are terrible, and the Eagles don't look very good. So it's sort of a top-heavy conference. But, man, those top six or so teams are – it's going to be a battle in the playoffs in the NFC.
Yeah, Boy, I mean, it's really, really interesting to see what's happening with Arizona, the way that they have come together this year. And I still think the Rams might be the team to beat out of that division when it's all said and done, just because they have some players with that kind of experience, and Arizona really doesn't have the same roster. But just Aaron Rodgers, Sage, wasn't it stupid to hear people after the first week, when look, it was an unusually horrific performance by Aaron Rodgers in week one, but to watch national and former players at that come after Aaron Rodgers like he was like this could be the end for him or whatever, just instead of writing it off as a bad game, I thought that was really staggering. And ever since that game, he has been just terrific.
Well, I think it's easy, you know, sort of fodder for the media and fans alike to say, you know, Aaron Rodgers had plenty of turmoil in the offseason. You know, is he going to come back or what's he going to do? Is he going to retire? And then all of a sudden they get destroyed in the first game and you're like, ah, I can jump on this guy because I've been waiting to jump on because I don't like him anyway.
Right.
You know, so I think that was sort of an easy, if you didn't like Aaron Rodgers, man, that's a good time to pile on. And of course that's, you had to quickly get off the pile because, you know, they've won six in a row, right? I will say, you know, stats are one thing, but sometimes when you look at how dominant teams are, you know, the Cardinals have outscored their opponents by 111 points so far. They've scored 225 points and they've only given up 114. That is one of the best offenses in the league offensively, and that's one of the best defenses in the league as well. The Packers have only outscored their opponents by 22 points. They are winning some close ball games. Of course, there was the blowout by whatever it was, 20 or 25 or 30 in that first game. But you know, this is not a dominant football team. But when you've got a great quarterback who has been in a million games, like the Packers, the Buccaneers, you win a lot of close football games. Those guys just know how to manage in the fourth quarter and second half. They know exactly when to make the right decisions. They know when to sort of take their chances. And they may be, you know, close wins, but they are wins. And you know, Tom Brady does the best job of that in probably the history of the NFL, of just sort of finding ways to win football games at the end without having a complete dominant football team. And I think Green Bay sort of has that with Aaron Rodgers. He's won a lot of football games over the years. And he's also, he can win games with this Packers team without having to be a Superman. And that's where, say, like a Kansas City isn't at. I feel like Pat Mahomes is trying to be Superman in every single play. And, you know, you end up turning the ball over. You end up trying to do too much. And I think Aaron, for years, was sort of that similar type of player, always trying to do so much. But now he has a running game. He has a great offensive scheme. Got the best receiver in the NFL. He's got a pretty solid defense over there on the other side. And so, you know, it's fun for me as an old 43-year-old guy with gray hair to see these other quarterbacks who are right around 40, or the Tom Brady in their 40s, older than me, still out there making it happen. And it does show that, you know, the physical attributes, just straight athleticism, is not everything when it comes to being a quarterback. There's so much that is about your mind and how you can think and how you can analyze defenses and make quick decisions. And Aaron and Tom do it as good as anybody probably in NFL history.
I'm going to ask you about the other team that you study with, Chicago Bears. And, you know, anytime that you have quarterbacks.
Boy, your job sucks.
Yeah. Oh. Bears and Texans.
Oh, hold on. Before you guys go, yeah. You know, Washington drafted me. I don't know. They're 2-whatever they are this year.
Yeah.
Then they go down to Miami. I think they're 1-something or whatever they are this year. Then the Texans, they're struggling. The Vikings are actually doing okay, and the Giants suck. I went to the Giants reunion last weekend, and you know, they played the Rams and got absolutely embarrassed at home. And I'm like, man, my former teams are just atrocious. And I can't stand watching Vikings games. I have a hard time watching Kirk Cousins play. They're just sort of so sort of boring to me when I watch them, even though, you know, they're playing better. But, yeah, my former teams, and to go on this radio show, then, you know, I gotta rewatch that Bears game right after this and go into Chicago and talk about that situation. I mean, that is I think even worse than Houston, because, you know, the Bears have a veteran head coach who's been there now for, I don't know, 4 years or whatever, and they've scored, you know, they're scoring 3 points every game too. I mean, it's that, and they have their starting quarterback who is a high draft pick.
I've watched
that situation is even harder to watch.
Yeah, but I've watched plenty of Bears games so far, and you've watched all of them. I don't think things are fixed as soon as Matt Nagy's fired. A, the Bears don't fire coaches in season, I was told. I made a comment like, I think Nagy's going to have a hard time surviving this one. And I had a slew of Bears fans say, yeah, you must be new here, because Bears don't get rid of quarterbacks in season. But that team has, I don't think it's going to magically fix for Justin Fields or for that offense as soon as Matt Nagy's gone. It's going to take more time. Fields isn't there yet. It's going to take a while for him, and you got to hope he gets there. The running game isn't where it needs to be. The offensive line needs help. Like, the Bears have a lot of problems, but that's not really my question. What I want to find out from you is your thoughts on, I understand the media and fans are going to want to see young first-round quarterbacks as quickly as possible, and in many situations, it's the right call to put a quarterback in that spot. But I wonder about the pressure of that versus the intelligence of doing that when maybe a quarterback's not ready, and for sure there are not the pieces around that quarterback to be successful. We saw it with David Carr. Their plan was to have him come off the bench, and that quickly went away when Kent Graham showed up too heavy. And, you know, I think the beating he took at the hands of a poor offensive line at times really had an impact on his career, and I'm kind of curious about your thoughts on balancing the young quarterbacks. You've seen them before, young quarterbacks. How do you balance giving them their shot versus knowing when to fade the noise outside and stay the course with process on them?
You know, I think this conversation, you know, we could talk about for a couple of minutes. This is like a 2-hour podcast.
Right,
and
you're right.
You can go
you're
back right. and forth as to when it worked, when it didn't work. Short term, you know, a lot of times in the short term, starting a rookie doesn't work. But in the long term, you go, well, you know, Peyton Manning, he, you know, his rookie year, he was terrible. He threw 97 interceptions, but look at the career he ended up having. So thank God we got him out there and got those sort of interceptions out of the way, right? I mean, then there's the other, like, well, Aaron Rodgers sat for 3 years, or Philip Rivers sat for a couple of years. And I mean, there's sort of, you know, it just depends which take you want to have. And every situation is different. Every rookie quarterback is different. But also, every offensive coordinator is different. And I watch the Bears' offense, and it's a travesty. It's a travesty watching that offense. Yeah. And the way they design things and the way they don't help out their young quarterback. There are things that Justin Fields does extremely well. Extremely well. When he has an out route or a 20-yard comeback and they can block it up and give him time, he is so accurate, and he's got a really strong arm, and he does not miss those throws. When they can run a bootleg, he usually can, you know, find a completion or run for, you know, 7 or 8 yards. When they can get the ball out quickly, he doesn't miss throws very often. But if they try to make him be a pocket passer in empty with all the various fronts and defenses and blitzes and protection issues that a young quarterback does not understand yet, you are literally putting him in the worst position possible. And the Bears do that. It's weird watching their offense. He'll go under center. They'll run outside zone to the left. Running back will run for 12 yards. They'll come back. Let's go shotgun. Why? Why? Because your play sheet says that? Because you design these plays that you just want to call just to beat some coverages? When this is not what I know, you know, with a shotgun at Ohio State when they had better talent than everybody else, but this is not college anymore. Justin does fine from under center. He does fine being that, hand the ball off and play action and bootleg, type quarterback. That protects a young guy. So he doesn't have to know, you know, all of these things with protections. And also, you know, the offensive line's terrible. So you go empty. You have nobody helping out, you know, those guys up front who are already struggling. And it's just sort of blows my mind when I watch them play how bad the game plans are and how bad the play calling is and how to not protect a young quarterback. And the Bears sort of seem to do it time and time again. And so I'm about to go on that show, and I will, like, have stars on my notes of, like, why would you do that? Why would you call that play at that situation after you just ran up for 20 yards on first down? You know, it's sometimes I feel like NFL coaches way overthink things because they think since they're paid a lot of money that they have to be super smart. And at the end of the day, sometimes this game is just between offensive line and defensive line, and you know what? We called a handoff, and it worked. Let's call another handoff, right? I mean, it goes back to, like, high school football. Why would you do something different when the last play works? So, yeah, run a similar type of play and do it the other way. They don't. Or do a play off of that play. They'll just, like, hand the ball off their 20-yard gain, and next thing you know, they're in shotgun for the next two plays, and one of them, there's a holding penalty in the left tackle, so now back to second 20. I mean, it's like you're just creating problems for yourself, and I just see it time and time again. And, you know, if Matt Nagy is the head coach of the Chicago Bears next year, I will fly down to Houston. We will go out and get some fajitas, and I will pay for it because it's not going to happen.
Well, we're going to be starving. We're going to be starving him because he's not going to be the head coach. Zero
that's
chance.
Right, that's right.
It
bothers me when I see coaches put young quarterbacks in tough positions, whether he's playing or not playing. They can make that decision. But I do think you can play a young guy as long as you protect him from his, you know, from his own weaknesses and try to maximize his strengths. And they actually maximize his weaknesses, which for any young quarterback is protection.
That's Sage Rosenfels. We got to cut it there. 946 ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Maximize
Sage,
the always, weakness. That's a new one.
That's a new one. You just created a new saying, Sage. Congratulations. We appreciate it, Sage, as always, and we'll talk to you again next week. All right, there's Sage Rosenfels. I don't think he has to watch the Texans against the Rams, really.
He can just say, boy, a lot of bad decisions. Yeah. And didn't seem like a scheme right. The defense really did a bad job. Yeah, but, well, if that's going to be the case, go to Underdog Fantasy right now. Immediately start firing on over on, touchdown passes for Matt Stafford. Immediately start firing unders on the Texans. I mean, they have the under-over-under contest. Yeah,
Underdog Fantasy has daily fantasy, which is awesome. I play that all the time. I like to play head-to-head, but also three-man, six-man. You can have larger entries every single week. They have the large entries for a chance to win big, big money. But, you know, they got basketball, baseball, football. You want to do over-unders on total bases, strikeouts for World Series tonight. You want to tie it up with, you know, with basketball. You can do that as well. And you can pick anywhere from 2 to 5 over-under candidates. And if you hit them right, you're going to win multipliers. You know, for 2, you're going to win 3 times your play. So if you hit 2 people, you make it $20, then you're going to make $60. That's how it works. You win 20-1 if you pick 5 of them correctly. So let's say you put 100 in there, you'd win $2,000. It's amazing the type of money you can make and how easy it is. It's all completely legal, and it's all available at underdogfantasy.com. Use promo code RADIO. You're going to get a $25 cash bonus on top of your first deposit, and you can use that any way you want. That's underdogfantasy.com, promo code RADIO.
My name is Bob Lee, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I know you ain't a pimp, but pimp, remember what I taught you. Keep your heart 3 stacks. Keep your heart. Hey, keep your heart 3 stacks. Keep your heart. Man, these girls are smart. 3 stacks, these girls are smart. Play your part.
You're listening to Houston's longest-running sports radio morning show, The Bench with John Granato and Lance Zierlein on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John and Lance.
So you got the World Series? Announcing crew?
The broadcast teams, yes.
The broadcast team that you'll hear right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Schulman, Mendoza, Eduardo Perez.
Yep.
And who?
And then we've got Chris Singleton, Marley Rivera, and Buster Olney will handle pregame, postgame, and reporting.
Oh, Buster Olney's going to hate that the Astros are in it. You got to turn your mic on.
Okay. You know what, guys? I'm going to go ahead and turn my mic on this segment.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, welcome back, guys, from the Sage Rosenfels Hour. I just got a text. What song did you just play?
The International Players Anthem.
I just got, yes, love this song, LOL. Vanessa Richardson.
Vanessa
listening
Richardson.
To the show?
Yeah, yeah.
And she just said, yes, I love this song. Do you or do you hate America? Which one, Vanessa? Okay. I'm sure you do love this song since you're anti-national
anthem. So she went like extra viral.
Anti-American.
Oh, yeah, because you want to replace the national anthem
International Players
with
Anthem.
With some kind of a Hispanic
with
song
some
or
kind
something.
Of players anthem of international players.
Yes.
Because you don't focus on our country,
Vanessa.
America.
Oh, you
so
don't...
I'm sure you do love this song.
Yeah.
It's some random rap song. I don't even know what it has to do anything. But I know you want the International Players Anthem for international players.
Because you hate America.
Yeah. So the Astros have Venezuelans, Cubans, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, people from New Mexico. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Great. Okay. That's great.
Do you...
But it's not a World Series.
Yeah.
These are all comments I read on her thread of her text.
So if you go on a blind date, usually when you go on a blind date, right, you go out with the person, right? You're going to go on a blind date and you're going to meet somebody?
Yeah, but you don't know. You haven't been introduced to them previously.
Right.
Or maybe you haven't even seen
them.
Do
you think if you're the woman that you should bring 23 family members along with you?
What are they? That's a little much. I think that's a little overwhelming.
This happened.
I know it's not jumping off on date one.
And, well, here's the deal. In Zhejiang, China, this woman brought 23 of her family members on a blind date to test the generosity of the man that she was set to dine with. And, well, it didn't really work out for her. He stuck her with the bill, and it was $3,100.
What is this, Ricky Hazing?
Yeah.
So he brought all of his family just so they could all eat.
That's just, but is that not a little much, you think, to bring 23 family members?
No, it should have been an immediate red flag.
Yeah.
Something's not right here. My spider senses are tingling. I don't like the way this is jumping off. Table for 24, please.
Well, I thought it was just, I got a corner table.
I just made reservations for 2. Yeah, we came in early and made a table for 24.
Yeah.
We've got the whole banquet room.
Have you ever gotten aggravated at your kids?
No. What's that like?
What have you ever then? Shot one of them because they wouldn't stop playing the guitar?
No, I have not done that.
Okay. Well, that happened in Blue Ash, Ohio. 79-year-old, and I could see this. A 50-year-old son wouldn't stop playing the guitar. Yeah. I could see old dad going, oh, yeah?
Older people now, get now a little, you'll
stop.
Yeah.
Now you'll stop.
Yeah. How about now?
After I shoot you.
In the leg, not the stomach, hopefully.
I don't care. I don't think that's a very nice family. So he shot him and threatened to shoot him. And he said, well,
is it not
he
a
wouldn't
nice
stop
family?
Playing. So guess what?
Or
I shot him.
Is it a family that when they say something, they mean something?
That's right. That's more the thing. You actually threaten your kids with punishment and then don't do it.
They don't follow through and they don't respect it. And guess what he said? If I say I'm going to shoot you if you don't stop playing that guitar and I don't shoot him, he's not going to believe me next time.
Right.
It'll fall on deaf ears. So I'm going to have to unload this clip. So he knows that I mean it.
You should maybe try that with Mason at some time. And maybe he'll do his homework next time. All right. So,
by the way, Patrick Creighton, I just got this. Patrick Creighton, our own Patrick Creighton, is going to be doing the post-game show of every Astros World Series game right here on ESPN 97.5.
Oh,
so
sweet.
After you listen, if you want to listen to the national, well, that's what Patrick said. I don't know. Maybe we're not. So that's here. I hear noises from the other room. So I think that's happening.
You got some pushback there, Tyler? What's going on?
I think that's...
Hold on.
We'll handle it after the show. So it was...
All right, Charlie's next.
I was asked to promote that, was, you know, me being a team guy and all, but maybe...
Game one, we got the win?
Maybe we can't do that.
We're done. Game one, we got the win?
Yep.
Astros win. All right. I like how convincing you are there. Good Lord. He doesn't think we're going to win tonight. What the hell's wrong with you?
Do I have something right here?
Yeah.
Proximo?
Yeah.
Good, because that means I'm talking about Maestro de Bell. I'm talking about tequila. Because what I'm going to do before I go is I'm going to take a shot. I'm going to go see my man Cobos today. I'm going to go have my delicious nachos, and I'm going to have my Maestro de Bell to coat the stomach beforehand. See, I'm working the opposite way. And then after we win, I'm going to go have another one and a nice cold cocktail. You can have it as a sipping tequila. You can have it as a cocktail tequila. Maestro de Bell has a variety of different types of tequilas. The silver is great for the cocktails. That's what I use. I love the añejo. I'm a huge fan of how smooth it is and the delicious smoky flavor. But the Cristalino, which is a varietal that they have, is that you need to know about, is Diamante. And the Diamante is charcoal filtered. It was the first ever Cristalino that was made. And if you want a chance to experience yourself, head to where your local liquor store where fine liquors are sold and ask for Maestro de Bell. If they don't carry it, which I'd be shocked, make sure you demand that they carry it, because this is the type of tequila that you're going to want to have on your shelves, and you're going to run a restock after they're all gone. Maestro de Bell. Maestro de Bell, and experience the Diamante, the Cristalino from Maestro de Bell.
This is The Bench on ESPN 97.5.